is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The headline, Turkey's lira, its new low after Erdogan's re-election. Subhead, Wall Street Journal. Absent a radical change of policy or a bailout, the country is inching ever closer to financial ruin, according to economists. Nonetheless, Mr. Erdogan, after 23 years in power, is to be returned to power by the people of Turkey, who are struggling with an economy that is brittle to the point of broken and an inflation that is unpredictable. I welcome Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, to comment on Mr. Erdogan's return to power one more time, and to comment also on what this means for the Black Sea Basin, for the Mediterranean Basin. This is Asia Minor, the pivot point for Eurasia. Gregory, a very good evening to you. There is a headline in Europe, just one that I read quickly, saying that NATO or the European Union or some combination are relieved at Erdogan's return to power. I suppose the proverb is, better the devil you know than the one you don't. However, what does this mean for the NATO organization that Turkey is part of, an integral part of, for the European Union that has more than once rejected Turkey as a member? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, I would be surprised if anybody in NATO saw this Erdogan re-election as a positive for the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Erdogan is resolutely captured now by Russia and by the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and to a degree by Beijing itself. So he is basically trying to juggle, as always, between the West and the East. And in the meantime, he has not done anything constructive for NATO or for Europe. It's true that that Turkey's bid to become a member of the European Union was stymied, not because of the rejection of the European Union at all, but because President Erdogan refused to allow Turkey or to make Turkey comply with the European Union's entry qualification requirements. So there was no way that that Turkey was going to become a member of the EU, and Erdogan was adamant that that the EU should embrace Turkey because it was Turkey and because Turkey is the great nation and therefore didn't have to comply with any European strictures. But the reality is that that Turkey was going to be in trouble for the next few years, whether or not Erdogan was re-elected. Had his opponent, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, been elected, you would have actually seen Turkey moving closer to NATO. It would have seen Turkey also begin to apply more or less conventional economic wisdom to reducing the inflation in Turkey, reducing the economic polarization in the society. The reality is that President Erdogan has ensured that his central bank directors have liberalized bank rates instead of raising interest rates to curb inflation. He's actually done the reverse, and that's just never going to work. They have to get rein in in inflation. But instead, what Erdogan has been doing was propping up the value of the lira so that the cost of imports wouldn't be seen as so high to the public. He actually really lied about the situation. He controlled the informational context. He has imprisoned or contained all of his opponents, essentially. The reality is that he's controlling all of the media, therefore the news is not getting out. He basically demanded that the central bank use all of Turkey's foreign exchange earnings of reserves to prop up the Turkish lira. And that was done right up until the threshold of this election. And as you said, the lira dropped in value immediately after the election took place. So right now we're going to see massive pain in the Turkish economy for the foreseeable future. The question is whether Erdogan will survive this next term in office one way or another. But he has continued to embark on prestige spending to make Turkey look like a great power. Today, they just rolled out their new fourth generation fighter, which is meant to replace the F-16 because they weren't able to buy the F-35 from the US. So they've just built this new fighter, which will have its first flight before the end of the year. And they've spent a fortune on that. They've spent a fortune on new weapons. But you've got an air force, which he doesn't trust, a navy, which it can't go anywhere, and a land force, which is in debatable condition because he's afraid to allow any of his military to have any power in case they overthrow him. And of course, as a result of that, he didn't let the military help to relieve the earthquake in southeastern Turkey earlier this year, which has caused about, but a conservative estimate, about $108 billion worth of infrastructural damage. So the military were not allowed to go in and help relieve the suffering of the people at that time. So there's a real mess, all of which has been clouded by the fact that he controlled all the information outlets, controlled the value of the currency as much as he could, and now cannot control it anymore. He was able to blame his opponent, Kılıçdaroğlu, as having supported a Kurdish terrorists, which is a joke, really, because Kılıçdaroğlu is certainly a law and order man, but would have been much more supportive of restoring good relations with NATO. And that's now not going to happen. But nonetheless, because of Turkey's extremely fortuitous geopolitical position or geographic position, it is the land bridge between the West and the Central Asian states. In other words, if the West wants to get in and exploit its the very positive sentiment of the Central Asian states, then it has to go through Turkey. That's the only viable land bridge across to Azerbaijan and across the Caspian.
And
there,
are the Central Asian states ready for another years of Erdogan? Are they comfortable with him?
Well, they know he's supportive of them and will allow this land bridge. The question is whether Turkey itself, or Turkey, as they now call it, is capable of not bending totally to the wishes of Moscow and Beijing. Then the Central Asian states welcome Erdogan's re-election to that degree. They're under no illusion that Turkey is any more able to make the large investments that were once being made in Central Asia, because the Turkish economy cannot stand any outflow of foreign exchange at this point.
Well, let me ask a very specific question. Does this bolster Baku in its conflict with Armenia to have Erdogan confirmed back in power?
I think any Turkish government would have continued to support Azerbaijan. And the reality is that that it was in Turkey's interest, whoever was in power, to ensure that Armenia did not, if you like, circumscribe Azerbaijan's ability to get a land bridge over from the Caspian Sea across Azerbaijani territory into Turkey. So I think we wouldn't see any diminution of Turkish control, or Turkish support for Azerbaijan under a new president.
Is Erdogan's foreign policy supportive of the Central Asian states' ambitions? Uzbekistan, for example, where you've been recently. Does Tashkent see Ankara as a simpatico?
Certainly. Ankara is very sympathetic to the Central Asian states, and particularly to Uzbekistan, which is the largest population in Central Asia. But that translating that sympathy into trade and investment is going to be difficult because Turkey can export to that region, but certainly can't afford to import a lot from there. But it can assist politically in giving that that land bridge, which is critical to Central Asia, so that they can trade with the outside world without having to go through Russia or mainland China.
And finally, Erdogan in the Black Sea Basin. I don't see any major policies disputed during the presidential race. Is it status quo? He will be the largest force in the Black Sea, and he will not permit warships to enter? Is that status quo?
Well, the status quo is that warships can enter, and under the Montreux Treaty, Russia and other powers can have access through the Bosphorus to, between the Black Sea and the Mediterranean, provided Turkey is not at war with one of with Russia. So that's basically the status quo. They've been very careful, however, about seeing foreign powers in the Black Sea. Russia, of course, is the major power in the Black Sea there. Turkey does stand the chance of improving its position there because it's just uncovered extensive new gas fields in the Turkish waters of the Black Sea. So that will help Turkey going forward. But whether it's certainly not enough to save the Turkish economy at this stage. We've got the lira dropping in value from 2003, for example, at about 1.1 lira to the US dollar, now to more than 20 lira to the US dollar. And we've got inflation in real terms over 100% per annum. So this is something which is not going to be brought under control anytime soon, no matter how much Turkey gains access to gas reserves, which it can sell into Western Europe.
Because we're on the eve of the counteroffensive in Ukraine, I ask this innocent question. Can we imagine naval combat in the Black Sea in these next days? If warships can enter and exit, is it possible we're going to see shootout in the Black Sea?
No. The United States and NATO powers are very, very careful about confronting Russia in the Black Sea. That would be an escalation to nuclear and, you know, global warfare potential. So that's not going to happen deliberately. I think Russia has been very careful not to interfere with Allied shipping in the Black Sea. It has, if you like, shown that it can dominate the use of U.S. surveillance drones, but that's as far as it's gone.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're going to Moscow. There's been a drone attack. What does it mean? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Battle.